Welcome along then. Yes, the Cheltenham Festival is shortly approaching. Not long now until the greatest show on turf. Here we are, myself, Sam Hart, alongside Tom Park and Chris Cook for this week's Front Page. A very quick show, but looking ahead to some of the top five potential stories of the week that is upcoming. Welcome along, gents. Chris Cook, I'm going to start with you and head to you because you are currently at Cheltenham itself. What's it been like? What's the atmosphere been like in the build-up to the festival?
So the atmosphere today is quiet. It's sort of calm before the storm. But I'm feeling very G'd up for it because I've just had a great privilege of walking the course with Nicky Henderson. It wasn't my plan to walk course, but I did want to talk to him, and he was walking the course. So I had to kind of follow him and tag along whilst badgering my questions out at him. But it was very interesting, and it was just great to be on the sacred turf. The thing that I took away from our conversation was that he was saying, I can't find much good to soft out here. In his view, it's basically good going. And there's not much rain that's due until maybe Thursday night. So I think if you're on a horse that really needs soft ground, you're out of luck. That's my breaking news.
Okay, yeah, we're in for potentially a quick going Cheltenham Festival. And Tom Park, you absolutely love this week. I know you do. I don't know if you're heading down for any of the days, but I know you'll be keeping a keen eye on what's going on. How much are you looking forward to it?
Oh, yeah, can't wait. The last few, the build-up to the Cheltenham Festival is almost as exciting as the week itself for me. I absolutely love the 2 or 3 weeks building up, watching all the Cheltenham preview nights and taking in all the information and trying to kind of read between the lines and what connections are saying about the horses and stuff. But yeah, it all comes to fruition this week. Absolutely cannot wait. And look, I think this is probably the most competitive festival we've had in a long, long time, particularly from a betting perspective. So yeah, really, really excited. Can't wait.
Okay, yeah, I've just got to Cheltenham myself and really, really getting into the mood now. Let's get into our top five stories then, gents, and we'll start off with, well, some of the absent friends and the underdogs of this year's festival. Starting off with some of the absent friends, it's always the case at Cheltenham Festival that we don't have all of the superstars turn up for this big meeting. Unfortunately, injuries and certain things rule horses out of the festival, but a few names to know: Constitution Hill, State Man, Galloping de Champ, a recent one, Marine National, Sir Gino, maybe even John Bond. We'll have to wait and see what John Bond's plans are. But Chris, like we say, we can't always have every sort of great grade one horse turn up at this festival, but we are missing some superstars.
It's just the nature of the beast with jump racing in particular, isn't it? There's always going to be one or two that you'd rather were there that just can't make the gig. It feels like we've been slightly unlucky, I think, in the last week or so, that Marine National and Galloping de Champ have been added to the list. But as long as you get to the days of these races and they still feel like really competitive quality races, that's not something I would ever feel would detract from the festival. But it's a slight pity. This is a Gold Cup, which we've all been keenly anticipating. It's still going to be a great race. But you lose something when you've got a dual winner like Galloping dropping out at the last minute.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one horse that obviously everyone's been talking about every day leading up to the festival is Constitution Hill, and he's taking his flat campaign now. But we're wishing him all the best, him and the team, and Nicky. So, yeah, let's move on, Parky, to yourself. Out of all those horses that I've just mentioned, I mean, Galloping de Champ is the interesting one because I was intrigued listening to Johnny Dineen on Up in the Ante this week, who said, as part of the rails, he said that, he could see Galloping de Champ being well punted and potentially even going off favourite for a Gold Cup on Friday. He seems to be the main star attraction, potentially for a Gold Cup day from a viewer's perspective.
Yeah, I mean, the sentimental side of things, it's really sad that Galloping's not there. You'd want to see him in the race. With my punting brain on, and he's someone who's been very keen on Gaelic Warrior for pretty much half the year, I'm glad that Paul Townend will be riding Gaelic Warrior because I think he has got a massive chance. So I'll be honest, I was jumping with joy when Galloping de Champ was initially ruled out. But once it's settled, I think it is sad that Galloping de Champ is not there. We'll never know, I suppose, whether he won. I think it'll be a stretch too far for him to be back next year with a big chance in the Gold Cup. But you never know, he's a phenomenal racehorse. But yeah, look, there's been quite a lot of big stars coming out. You'll notice that some of the occasional fans that come to watch Cheltenham once a year probably going to be missing the likes of Constitution Hill and Sir Gino and John Bond. These names stick with them. So it'd be sad for them probably not seeing them big names. But look, this is jump racing and there's potential for a lot of new stars to come to the fore. And look, we've got Lossiemouth in the Champion Hurdle, which is something that we've wanted for a long, long time. And yeah, I think, can't wait for that. Champion Hurdle looks a really good race.
I mean, that's a really good point, is that we've got so many options for these horses these days that, you know, if one horse drops out, that means another horse steps up. If, you know, you had Constitution Hill or Sergino in that Champion Hurdle, there's every chance Lossiemouth would have been going somewhere else. Yeah, and like you, I'm really glad that she's in the race. I believe in her, but at least I want to see if she's up to a Champion Hurdle.
Yeah, that opening day just looks sensational. It really does. I mean, that's Supreme as well. It's different class. As always, the Tuesday, one of the real highlights of the week. And then the underdog, guys, we've tied this into this part of the story, but everyone loves an underdog story. And we talk about all the big trainers. I hate calling them smaller trainers, but it's lovely to see them have their big day at the big festival. Adam Nicol, he's got Manella Study in the Triumph. Emma Lavelle, maybe Marchand 2 in the Stayers. Maybe even the Moors could be classified in this, with Mondo Man in the County after winning the Imperial Cup. And you could even include Jeremy Scott if you wanted to go back-to-back in the Champion Hurdle with Golden Ace. What's the main one that you're looking forward to as a potential big underdog story, Parky?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny we mentioned underdogs because, one won the Champion Hurdle last year. So, a few. I think Wendigo is interesting in the Brown Advisory for a very small syndicate that's been put together. It wouldn't be great if he was to win. I think he's got a good chance as well. Things seem to be going well for him. Vibes from the yard seem pretty good. Yeah, I'd give Wendigo a good chance of doing it for the syndicate. Same race, massive moment for Connor and Daniel King, with Oscar's brother, obviously bought by JP McManus. Looks like he's going to take his chance in the Brown Advisory. It's good to see these big owners like JP McManus keeping the faith with the smaller trainers and connections. So it'd be great to see him run well. And as you said, Manella Study, a lot of judges seem to give him a big chance in the Triumph, and what a story that would be for Adam Nicol, who you couldn't ask for a more picturesque setting than where his yard is based up. He trains his horses often on Bamborough Beach, which for anyone who's never been, it's probably the most beautiful place in this country. So, phenomenal setting. So it would be amazing if Adam Nicol was to win the Triumph of Manella Study. And as I said, a lot of people seem to give him a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. Adam Nicol, I think Andrew Dietz did a beautiful piece of video work from that lovely view of the castle, and it was a stunning place to be training. Chris Cook, if there was, it seems like every British winner we have feels like an underdog story at the moment. We'll get on to the Prestbury Cup in a minute, but is there one that you're potentially looking forward to?
The one that I think is a really plausible potential first-time festival winner is Declan Queeley. He's got Carrigmore Spruce in the Dawn Run. The Novice Hurdle for Mares on the Thursday. She ran a great race at Christmas at Leopardstown against the boys. Coming back against Mares only, I think she's been a little, she's sailing below a few radars. Just in the last few days, she's been backed. I think she's down to about 10-1 across the boards now. For the longest time, she was sort of being left at 16s, and I was thinking, why is no one more interested in her? But anyway, it seems the interest is coming. I think Bambino Fever is a little bit of a vulnerable fab in that race. She won one maiden hurdle and everyone's got really excited because, of course, she's got all the good bumper form. But that's one. Another one that I've got on my mind, and so realistically, this should not count as an underdog story. Lucinda Russell went very quiet her yard in January. I think they'd won when we were at 62, and it was starting to look like, their season was going the wrong way. But just in the last couple of weeks, she's had 10 winners. I think she had 3 air on Saturday there. Suddenly from, it being a sort of bad news tale, everything's going right for that yard. And it'll be very interesting to see if that carries over into sort of the quality races that we've got here at the festival this week. Scotland does not have a strong record historically at the Cheltenham Festival until Lucinda and Peter Schoonemore sort of came along, and they've been winning Ultimas in recent years, and they've got another chance with Myertown on Tuesday and King of Answers in the National Hunt Chase, and more runners to come later in the week after that. I'm definitely going to be sort of looking for reasons to back their horses.
There's some really lovely stories that could potentially come out of this year's festival. They're just a few from the guys there. Right, let's move on then, guys, to the battle between Great Britain and Ireland in the Prestbury Cup, whether the gap can close. Now, really interesting because plenty of chat's been coming around Britain getting closer to Ireland this year. Obviously, in sort of the last, I think it's the last 5 years, it's been mainly an Irish dominance. But before that, there was a fair share of winners between the British and Irish, and Britain did have a few years of winning the Prestbury Cup. We see the likes of Dan Skelton really putting his name in the mix, Ben Pauling. Obviously, we've got Nicky Henderson, Paul Nichols. Chris, can that gap close, or do you think we're going to see another Irish dominance?
Irish dominance is what I'm expecting. I did think during the season that a lot of the chatter around improved British prospects was sort of quite brave, a little bit optimistic. It wasn't clear to me about why things would change from the way that they've been in the recent seasons. It remains the case that Willie Mullins is hugely dominant. Other really powerful yards are also in Ireland. And big time owners, including British based owners, still seem very inclined to send their young horses over there to be trained. I sort of, through the morning newsletter that I do, the Front Runner, I monitor the Cheltenham Festival markets as we go through the winter. And it's been quite interesting to see how things have transitioned from quite a few British favourites for these races back in sort of December, January, to in the last couple of weeks. There's been a real swing towards Irish horses at the top of the markets. Going by that and looking at what happened last year, I think we might be on track for another sort of year of 8 or 9 British winners. It's a very broad axe guide to these things. But I can't see a credible reason why British prospects are going to step up on what happened a year ago. I think to an awful lot of people who are spectators and punters, that side of it doesn't necessarily matter. But in terms of following the strength of the industry, we obviously concern ourselves with that. I don't see yet any sea change in terms of the strength of jumps horses being based in Britain. These things are cyclical, but they're long-term cyclical. They don't change that quickly.
Okay, Parky, there's Chris's view of an Irish dominance there, and interesting at the time recording, based on favourites at the moment in each of the races, the current score will be 28 to Ireland, which is exactly what it was last year. What can you see coming up this year?
It's funny, I dotted up my selections that I put up for the Ultimate Guide, because I was under the impression that Britain had closed the gap a little bit. But when I dotted up the number of winners, I had 10 British winners and exactly 27, 28 for Ireland. So it isn't closing that much, really. And I had 4 for Skelton, 3 for Henderson, 2 for Pauling, 1 for Murphy. I think that the markets do seem a little bit more competitive, though. I didn't have Lords where it was Irish 1-2-3s. I think the Turners had a 1-2-3 for Ireland. Like, there's British horses who have chances in these races. And maybe, alluding to what Chris was pointing out, where people are perhaps thinking that Britain are closing the gap, maybe that comes down to the strength that we've got in the Gold Cup this year, where the Irish have kind of really kicked us out the park for the last 10 years. We've got like live chances. And like, if Britain were to get a 1-2-3 in the Gold Cup this year, would it really matter that the Irish had 9 or 10 more winners than us? I'm not so sure. I think that, yeah, it's... I think it is closing the gap. I think Skelton has got a really strong team. I must add that in them 10 winners, a lot of them were handicaps and they can go either way. So it could be on for a Mullins. And it looks like the Willie Mullins juggernaut is finally taking off, when earlier in the season he was quite quiet. Gordon Elliott was kind of filling in Ireland. He might have a very good festival. I think the gap is closing a little bit. But we might be in for a rude awakening when Willie goes through the card on Tuesday and that's the 1-2-3. He isn't going to have the 1-2-3 in the Gold Cup for this year, that's for sure. So Yeah.
I think that's a really valuable point about the shape of Willie's season. You know, they were a bit slower to get going this time than they usually are. And it does slightly feel like we're building towards, you know, a really impressive performance from that yard.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, guys. I think, look, Willie Mullins is certainly going to have a strong squad going into this year's festival. I'm sure they're going to start strongly with some key contenders on the opening day. We need to move on nice and quick on to the starters from last year. A lot was said about this. I was actually reading Lee Mottshead's piece on this from a couple of weeks ago, mentioning that there were 10 false or aborted starts last year. Look, it doesn't look good, you know, for new viewers especially. It looks like we're a bit disorganised. Sometimes these have to be rightfully stopped, and I agree. But I'd imagine, Chris, you can be a bit like me sometimes. When they're coming towards that tape, you're screaming, let them go at the TV. And they don't quite let them go. They have to bring them back. What do you think could happen this year? Do you think the note will be taken?
So I have had exactly that experience. What I tell myself and I guess we have to tell everyone else, you've got to understand the circumstances and try and just be patient and understand it. You know, this is a real melting pot this week. You know, you've not got just the sort of British jockeys who normally ride against each other. You have Irish jockeys coming over who, you know, maybe don't know the starter so well. You have amateur jockeys quite, you know, taking part to a significant degree. And so much desire, you know, and so much pressure on these guys to perform to the extent that really, you know, the overhanging threat of a ban if you do the wrong thing is arguably ineffective, even if you ramp up the bans to maybe twice what they currently are. I don't think a lot of these jockeys even have the risk of disciplinary action in their minds at all. They're living in the moment. They're thinking, you know, if I can get this right, you know, this is going to be the picture on my living room wall forever. This is going to be the memory that I tell all my relatives, my grandkids about. You know, it's that precious for a lot of these guys, you know, that sort of chance of coming up the hill in first place. And so, you know, surprising as it may seem, you know, three mile chases can definitely be won and lost at the start. And I completely understand why. They're fighting for position. You know, they're going off maybe with a bit more impulsion that is really wise. So it's about the starter building a relationship with the jockeys, which is hard to do considering he's working with jockeys he doesn't see most of the year. If they can get on the same page, then hopefully we can have a better experience this week. My instinct is, you know, for the starter to give a little bit more than was happening last year and to just let them go the odd time when they're basically together as a field. But as the BHA has pointed out, if you get into the habit of just letting them go, then, you know, by the end of the week, you're going to have some real charge of the light brigades going on, which is not what we want. You know, we want collected, controlled, disciplined, hard to achieve in these circumstances.
And that's it. Parky, I imagine you echo that.
Yeah, it's really frustrating from a punter's perspective. I mean, I had a lot of, after reading Lee's excellent piece, I had a lot more sympathy for the starters than I do at when the tapes of the Supreme are going up and there's a false start called. And the frustration I have is when we then go to a standing start, or if it happens a couple of times, I know it's at their discretion for the first one, and then we can either do a standing start or not. It's the standing starts that I have a real issue with. If it's deemed the best way to start a race is how we do it, then it should be the right way to do it the second time and even the third time. Because a standing start, to me, that's when you're really annoying the punters, because you get a lot of bad luck when it's just so inconsistent. Robbie Supple said in that piece that it's not about perfection, it's about consistency. And the way that I see them standing starts, there's just absolutely no consistency whatsoever. You're just relying on, which if your horse jumps into the back of another, then you're pretty much out the race. And that's what I find frustrating from a punter's perspective. Now, they make a very good point that the reason they do the standing starts is because horses can get worked up. And when you continue to repeat this process, you're going to risk injuries and stuff like that. And I get that. However, do just think there needs to be a little bit more understanding to the punters in these circumstances, particularly those that are going maybe once or twice a year to the races. They're having a bet. It's a bit farcical when your horse is kind of left at the start almost, and you find yourself 5-10 lengths behind the field when you were out there to be a front runner. I think that's the bottom line. Like, these horses will line up sometimes. Yes, everyone wants to kind of be up with the pace, but you're sometimes getting front runners that are left towards the back. It's just the end of the race. We've spent 3-4 months studying how this race is going to be run, and it's all up in the air just because of the procedures that are in place. That's what I find challenging with it. Now, I'm no horseman. I absolutely get that there's reasons for doing these standing starts, but it would be that I have the major issue with. I would be in favour for going back, doing it again, and having some form of video process where you retrospectively at the end of the race go back and fine whoever's caused the second false start, a bit like they would do in athletics to a certain degree. First start, fine. If there's a false start, go back. Second time, anyone who's found for impeding the start is hit with a fine. And yes, there's an argument about fines being strong enough, and it might not be the answer, but I just want to see consistency and punters there. Interestingly, last year they did get more relaxed as the week went on, didn't they, at letting them go. And I get the argument for not letting them, but there was some early in the week where it was stubborn from the starters, in my opinion, and they should have been letting them go.
Yeah. There's been some changes. They've moved the starting positions for the Brown Advisory and the Kim Muir, lengthening those races. I think the idea is that the particular spot where they were starting the race, there was a fence that was kind of getting in the way, and maybe they've given themselves a better chance. Also, they've changed the way that the horses go onto the course for the 2-mile hurdle races on the old course. So the very first one, the Supreme, is going to be affected by this. What used to be that they would come out of the little holding pen on the inside of the track and walk back up the track and then turn around towards the start. Now they go further up the track when they exit the sort of the little holding pen, and they're actually coming down in the correct direction, if you like. They're following the racing line on the approach to the start. So that may do something to sort of take some of the awkwardness out of the approach to the tape, at least for that first race, and then the champion hurdle as well. You know, fingers crossed. If they get the first race off to a good start, then maybe that'll set the tone.
That's it. Seems like they're really keen to make the change. That's what I got from Lee's piece. I had a lot more sympathy for them after reading it, and they seem genuinely like they're really trying to get this right. So hopefully we will see a massive improvement.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see how it gets on throughout the week, but I'd imagine we will see a strong improvement on 2025. And that crowd that will be there to see those starts, that's the next topic that we're going to look at. And, you know, how big is this crowd going to be? What's the atmosphere going to be like across the week? We can remember on New Year's Day at Cheltenham this year, 44,000 people on New Year's Day, which is a record for that meeting. There's been loads of promo around this festival. I've been kind of on and around the London tubes and seeing all this advertising for the festival for the last few months, which has been absolutely brilliant. Do we think we're going to see record crowds, Parky? I know you're a big fan of a big crowd at a race meeting. Do you think we're going to see a large crowd, and will it be bigger than last year's?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the figures are at the moment in terms of their ticket sales. What I will say, look, this is from someone who has actually not been to the festival since COVID. And the reasons for that are it's so hard to get to for someone who lives up in the northeast where I do. I'm having to go down and be lucky to get a day off in the week. So it'll be going doing it in a day, which I used to do when I was younger and mad keen. I remember getting the coach down to Cheltenham via London, which was an ordeal, let me tell you. But it's a long day. It's hard to get accommodation. I don't think the issue, yes, there's been a few issues with parking, and there's been things that have come out of the festival which they've gone about improving, but I don't think that is the main reason why crowds have dipped. That's my opinion anyway. I think the course is fantastic. Like, if you compare Cheltenham now to even 10 years ago, what they've done with the viewing enclosure, it's absolutely outstanding. And they should be applauded for that. We're quite quick to bash what they're not doing right, but that is an amazing transformation, the race course. I go to the Paddy Power every year for the meeting, and so I'm still going to Cheltenham, but the actual festival itself, it's a bit tricky with work commitments, etc. But and people are in the same boat. It's we've got to remember this midweek meeting. So people have got to plan this way in advance. The ones who are, and they're only going to be mad keen to go. The key is retention. What can the racecourse do for the people that do go this year to make sure that they come back? And I think they are addressing the issues that they've had, because when things go wrong at the races, that is ultimately what is going to put people off going again. And that is something that we can do more to avoid. But ultimately, Cheltenham is where it is. It's a difficult place to get to for many. And they're doing a good job. Like, we get mega crowds still. We do. Telling this to, this is a massive, massive week in our sport. And it wasn't so long ago that they were absolutely smashing crowds out the park. And they were talking about having to reduce crowds to make the festival experience better. What I would say is that the festival experience must be better. I haven't been to the festival for a while, but I imagine the last time I was there on Gold Cup Day was the year that Q Card fell. And it was really, it was a sellout. It was, you were packed like sardines. They've opened up that race course now, particularly around the enclosure and stuff. And I think it's fantastic. And I'd imagine if I went on Gold Cup Day again, I would be in for a completely different experience. So I would encourage anyone who maybe hasn't been for a while to just go and test it out, because it's amazing what they've done with that viewing enclosure.
Good bit of advice there from Parky. I completely agree that they've really transformed the race course since COVID. Chris Cook, I'm sure you're going to just echo everything that Parky said. He summed it up really well there. But traditionally after these festivals, we end up talking about, you know, the festival costs too much, this and that, drinks are too much, whatever. Do you think we're going to be having the same conversations once again after this year's festival? Or do you think we're going to be looking at this in a more positive light?
I suppose it feels finely balanced at the moment. I would really love to be able to get to next week and have a different discussion from the one that we've been having after the last three festivals. It really shook me the first time they had a sort of major decline in the crowd figures, which I think was 4 years ago, wasn't it? Maybe 3 years. Because the festival in my lifetime, you know, going back 40 years as a race course, has been absolutely bomb-proof. You know, it was the one thing in racing that from 1 year to the next, it always seemed to get more popular. It was just like a winning formula that never went wrong. And then, it was the first year when crowds came back after COVID, this place was absolutely jammed. It was like, you know, people were determined to have that experience that they'd been denied for a year. And, you know, we had sort of football chants rolling around the stands, you know, before the final race. And it was just great fun. And then so the year after that was the first slump, and then we've had a couple more since. I think part of it may have been because the place was so jammed that first year when everybody came back that, you know, not everybody had a great experience. And I'm sure some people came away thinking, well, you know, the TV will do me for next year. So hopefully we've got to the end of that as an influence, and people are feeling that, oh, okay, I see the crowd numbers have come down. They made a visible effort to try and improve the experience. I'll give it another go. You know, I'd love to see that particular boat being steady, because, you know, when you're here in the middle of this, there's nothing like it as a sporting experience. Yeah. In my view, it's just completely intoxicating. You know, the best time that you can have. It's expensive for sure. And, you know, there are still hotels and B&Bs that are ramping up their charges for this week in a most unhelpful way. But even there, Cheltenham have been trying to work with, you know, sort of the local people to try and provide some reasonably priced accommodation in the area. And there have been other things going on sort of aimed at enticing people to come back for this particular week and to enjoy, you know, the very best of jump racing. So I would really hope that's going to have some effect. It was amazing to see that crowd on New Year's Day. 44,000 people. They have more people here than for the Wednesday of last year's festival. So, you know, if there's some momentum there that can maybe be built on, that's all to the good.
Let's just hope so. And look, let us know down in the comments if you are attending this year's festival and if you are looking forward to it. I'm certainly looking forward to attending myself. Right, guys, I'm going to try and wrap up the show here. And the last thing I want from you is one big, bold prediction for this year's festival. Trying to keep it slightly away from the horse with some of them, but I'm just going to kick things off and just say that I think that ITV's numbers once again will go up this year. Last year, there were 1.8 million views on the Gold Cup day, 200,000 up from 2024. And they had quite a younger audience. A third of that audience were aged between 16 and 34. And I think the reason I think that will increase is because they've done so much coverage of this Friday Night Live, so much kind of work and effort's gone into getting people into horse racing, younger people into horse racing. I do think it is going to work. I think we'll see more people with eyes on the screens. I couldn't believe the audience that they had at the Friday Night Live for Constitution Hill. It was just something spectacular. And the amount of phones that came out from these students to film him cross the line, I genuinely do think that that will have inspired a lot of people to get into racing. And I think that the coverage that they have done and the promotion will help them get increased viewership. Tom Park, we had a little chat about yours off air. I quite like yours.
Yeah, I've got a couple. I've got one that's a little bit bonkers, so I'll go with the less bonkers one first. I think Lossy Mouth will get absolutely smashed off the board. I can't see her going off any bigger than 5-4 for the champion hurdle. I think she'll win. Couple of reasons. I think the new lion tends to always be really weak in the betting. So I could see, I just think all the money will come for Lossy Mouth. I think there's a reason she's running the champion hurdle. I think she's been working the house down. And that's why they always said if she was good in her work, she'd run in the champion hurdle. She's running in the champion hurdle. That is a tip in itself. And the other thing is Willie Mullins, this Willie Mullins treble on the first day that I think is 30-1 at the moment, could all be rolling on to Lossy Mouth. And yeah, the bookies will be running scared then. So I can see her going off very, very short for the champion hurdle, much shorter than the 9-4 that is on now. As for the bonkers one, I said I'm keen on Gaelic Warriors' chance in the Gold Cup. I am. The horse I fear the most is the Jukebox Man. I could see the Jukebox Man placing, maybe even winning the Gold Cup, and then Harry Redknapp taking over as the Spurs manager.
Love this. That is so good. Like, I would absolutely love to see that. What a few weeks that will be for Harry. When I say that, trying to take over Tottenham is probably not the best thing in the world at the moment. Chris Cook, one bold prediction from you for this week, please.
So the thing I really appreciate about the festival is competitive racing. I'd love a festival with no odds on favourites. Always used to be that way. But, you know, we've ended up with two or three. It's taken a while for us to get some. I think even as recently as 10 days ago, no odds on favourites for this festival. A major improvement on last year when we had six with 10 days to go. And I'd love to be able to sit here and go, no odds on winners this time. But I think Factofile is just going to be too good, isn't he? But Majbra is the one I want to take on. That's my bold prediction, is Majbra is going to get going to put up another disappointing performance here at the festival. A bit like last year, he's odds on for the Queen Mother Champion Chase. And I just, you know, people forget because of one good performance that he has been a disappointing favourite on other occasions in the past. I think three times out of his last four races, he's been a beaten five. So I'll be fielding against him, even though there is no Marine National.
Okay. Majbra in the champion chase, vulnerable for Chris Cook. Let us know down in those comments your bold predictions for the week as well. Well, that's it, gents. There are five big stories that could potentially come up this week, and a decent bold prediction from both of you there. So appreciate your time on what is a very busy Sunday. We're recording this ahead of the Cheltenham Festival. We're going to have coverage across our Racing Post YouTube channel, our social platforms, on the website and in the papers. Don't forget to keep an eye on everything Racing Post across the week. Big thanks to Tom Park. Big thanks to Chris Cook. Enjoy the week, gents. And we'll be back again next Monday for a front page reviewing the whole of the 2026 Cheltenham Festival. Thanks for watching.